It's good to have everyone back this Sunday evening and being able to worship the Lord again together. We are involved in our His Word, but we are going through 1 Corinthians now. And if I don't know if you remember, but we spent January through May going through 1 Corinthians. And so I decided to do a couple of different things on Sunday night while we're finishing 1 Corinthians on His Word. And so this week I'm preaching on the high cost of loving money, and next week Jacob will be preaching on Sunday evening, Lord willing. I don't know how it works in your household at night, but lots of times Amanda and I like to watch a little TV before we go to bed. And, you know, if you watch the news, that just makes you more anxious and won't let you go to sleep. And very good. And so many things on TV get you, you know, they excited and they get it, especially Amanda, that's action shows, they just get her all hyped up and she can't go to sleep. So we've been trying to find some of the most, we figured out this week, we've tried to find the most boring shows we can find that will let us go to sleep in about 10 minutes. Well, somehow, through watching some Netflix shows, we've fallen upon watching some shows about the Old West, which puts Amanda right to sleep real fast. And I enjoy them, so I stay up watching them, which doesn't work very well. But anyways, these are documentaries. One was about the expansion out west and how that all took place and the landforms that they had to go over, the mountains and things like that. And then we watched one about ghost towns and all this expansion out in Nevada and California. And what's interesting about this history is how much money drove the expansion out west. And specifically, you can talk about in Nevada and some of the expansion there because of mining. But specifically in 1849, y'all know this. Even if you don't know a lot of American history, you probably be familiar with the football team, the 49ers. And that comes from the gold rush of 49. When in a little place, Sooner's Mill, they're going to discover gold. Man named George Marshall up on the American River there is going to discover gold. And the estimated population of California in the late 1840s was 1,000 people. In a little over 2 or 3 years, it went to over 100,000 people. These documentaries talk about how people came from China, South America, Central America, Canada, Mexico, all over people came. People came, a lot of single men, or people would leave their families back east and they would go out west and seek of their fortune. They did, interestingly, in present day money, over that next period of about the next 10 years, they will haul about $2 billion worth of precious metals, gold in specific, from that area. It's going to turn into big business pretty quick, and the actual, most of the typical single miner is going to leave heartbroken. Most of them are going to live pretty poor lives, and they're going to live pretty wild lives. Many of them would spend the gold they found, the little bit of gold dust they found in the day, in the saloons, in the other places of establishments at night. And that's really who made a lot of the money off of it. What's interesting about this, though, and thinking about how does this relate to our lesson, the high cost of loving money. When you study about the man who discovered this gold, his name was George Marshall. And there's a statue in his honor pointing to where he discovered the first gold that was erected 5 years after his death out in Colon, California. And he is going to discover it, but pretty soon so many people are going to come, he's going to be driven off his land. He's going to be thought of as this mystical person that could discover gold, and he actually claimed that sum, and so people would follow him around, and he actually did not have, obviously, any of those powers. And he is going to have to flee for his life on many occasions. He tried to start over. He lost. He was there doing lumber and had owned that land and had some rights to that land. He's going to basically lose all that, be forced off. In 1853, just a few years after finding this and creating all this, he packed a few of his supplies and sought to hide out in the hills. One quotation from his memoir suggests his plight at the time. "I was soon forced to again leave Cologne for want of food. My property was swept away from me, and no one would give me any employment. I've had," and there were some reasons for that, because he was so famous and all these other factors, "I've had to carry my pack of 30 or 40 pounds over the mountains, living on China rice alone. If I sought employment, I was refused on the reasoning that I had discovered the gold mines and should be the one to employ them." Everybody thought he was rich. "They did not wish the man that made the discovery under their control. Thus, I wandered for more than 4 years. He eventually, because of his fame and what he had done for the state of California, was eventually given a state pension for the last like 4 to 6 years of his life, and lived off state money to give him something so he wasn't such a pauper. And in one of his last journal entries, he talked about how if he could live his life over and if he could redo it, he wished that he would never have discovered the gold. Now, I'm not necessarily speaking to his heart and saying, look, he was just all about money. But what I am saying, his life is a testament to often the misery that is brought upon us through money. And these documentaries record that that was the typical, he's an exceptional case because he was the first one, but generally the typical case was the people who left everything, left wives and kids back home, or traveled land and sea to get there, usually were sorely disappointed, eked out sometimes a tough existence working for the mines, and struggled to have any peace or harmony in their life. Well, when you think about those stories, you could tell stories about people you've known here in our county, or people that on historic trips you've been on in other areas, where people have given everything to gain money, and it ended in misery for them. The Bible says this in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10. "For the love of money," and of course we need to emphasize, it's not that money in itself is inherently evil, but it's this desire, it's this love, it's this hunger. We're supposed to hunger and thirst after righteousness, not after money. "Is a root of all kinds of evils. So much evil comes from money. It is through this craving," through this craving, you know, that's this strong word, "that some have wandered," it reminds us of George Marshall, wandering around up in the mountains, just trying to get away from this fame and fortune that he supposedly had, "away from the faith, and have pierced themselves with many pains." The idea here is a pit. And you know, they would sometimes dig a pit, and they would put strong spikes down in that pit, very sharp spikes, and then they would cover that pit with some type of covering so the animal could not know it, would not see it, and they would come over that trap, fall down, and they would be pierced through, and then they would take that prey. Well, what the Bible's saying is that that's what money does to us. We're just going through life seeking, we're going through life craving, our focus is on money, and we fall into a trap, and we are pierced through with many pains and problems. The paraphrase version, the Message, says it like this: "The lust for money brings trouble, nothing but trouble. Going down that path, some lose their footing in the faith completely." Some people have left the faith completely because of that, "and live to regret it bitterly ever after." Live to regret it bitterly ever after. The Bible illustrates this in numerous places, but I want to look at four stories tonight that illustrate this point. The first story is from Achan in Joshua chapter 7. Now, some of these stories you might know well, others you may not know as well, but I hope you'll give attention to each of these stories. The story of Achan is found back in the book of Joshua, and the children of Israel, led by Joshua, are going into the land of Canaan. They're going to be conquering the land of Canaan. They're going to be taking over Canaan. And you know, the first place they go to, chapter 6, is Jericho. And God commanded them to, the key word is, to devote everything in Jericho to destruction. They were not to take anything from Jericho. Now, he didn't do this with all the cities. But this first city, God said, you can't have anything. You can't have any spoil. You cannot have any loot. You cannot have any profit from Jericho. It is all to be consecrated, all devoted to God. It's supposed to burn it all up, destroy it all for God. You can't take anything. Well, we're not going to know this in chapter 6. But chapter 7 tells us that somebody violated that rule. People of Israel, chapter 7, verse 1, broke faith in regard to the devoted things. For Achan, the son of Carmi, son of Zabdi, the son of Zerah, the tribe of Judah, took some of the devoted things, and the anger of the Lord burned against the people of Israel. They go into battle against one of the neat little named cities in the Bible, Ai. That's all it is Ai. They go in against this small little city. It was a small city with a small name. And they go into battle against them. And Joshua says, not many people there. Don't need to take a big army. He only sends 3,000 men down to conquer this little city. But because God was not blessing them because of Achan, Ai defeats them and kills 36 men. Joshua and the elders, they go and they lay down before the Lord. They are praying. They rent their clothing. They put their face on the earth. And they're bowing down to the Lord. And they ask the Lord, what have you done? Why are you bringing us here to destroy us? And so then in chapter 6, 7, verse number 10, the Lord is going to say to Joshua, get up. Why have you fallen on your face? Listen, it's not what God's saying is, don't think that I'm in the wrong here. God says, I'm not in the wrong. Israel is in the wrong. Israel has sinned. They have transgressed my covenant that I commanded. They have taken some of the devoted things. They have stolen and lied and put them among their own belongings. Now, because of time, we're going to move on down through this story. And so Joshua does something, basically, where he calls all the whole nation together, and he does it by tribe, goes with the tribe of Judah. It works on down. It nails it on down till we get to the idea the focus is on Achan. And so Achan is discovered to be the one who has sinned. That's verse number 18. So Joshua says, verse 19, to Achan, my son, give glory to the Lord. Give praise to him. Tell me now what you have done. Do not hide it from me. Now I want you to listen to Achan's very famous confession. Verse 20. Truly I have sinned against the Lord God of Israel, and this is what I did. When I saw among the spoil a beautiful cloak from Shinar, 200 shekels of silver, and a bar of gold weighing 50 shekels, then I coveted them and took them. See, they are hidden in the earth inside my tent with the silver underneath. His expression reminds us of Eve in the garden. When she saw that the fruit was good, he saw that these precious metals were there for the taking, and he coveted them. That is, where it crossed the line from simply seeing and thinking I wanted that to where he thought, I've got to have that. I need that. He was jealous for that. He was covetous of that. He wanted it, and he took it. I coveted. You see that? It's a different driving by the car place and saying, man, I'd like to have that car. Sure is a lot nicer car than what I'm driving. And driving by the car place every morning and coveting that car. Coveting is when we go from just thinking that would be something nice to have to where we are willing to do whatever it takes to rationalize our own greed, our own sometimes lies and sinful behavior to have whatever is the object of our desire. He saw it and he coveted it. Well, the story just gets worse because what's our lesson? The high cost of loving money. So Joshua says, well, that's all right. You confessed it, right? You understand? Give it all back and let's just go on with life. Let's go down there and beat Ai. No, that's not how it ended, is it? Joshua said, you troubled Israel. God's going to trouble you. Now, I use the word trouble there because they were in the Valley of Achor. It's a pun here. Valley of trouble. And so that's why, that's in the Hebrew here, that's what's going on, and he brings that out in the English. He says this to him, you are troubling Israel. God's going to trouble you. Verse 25, why did you bring trouble on us? The Lord brings trouble on you today. So they stoned him in the Valley of Trouble, the Valley of Achor. But notice, they stoned him with stones, burned them with fire, stoned them with stones, and raised over him a great heap of stones that remains to this day. And the Lord turned from his burning anger. Therefore, the name of that place is called the Valley of Achor. Now, a couple things before we move on to our next story. I want you to notice that the high cost of loving money does not only affect you. It is, you might think that if I'm coveting something, it's just about me. Achan probably thought, if I steal this, it's just about me. But notice, it caused the death of 36 other men. It caused the whole nation to suffer. And specifically, it caused his family to suffer with him. In the Old Testament concept, a man was the leader of his family. They were connected with him very directly. And his sin, in many ways, was a reproach and a sin done by the family. They all died with him. And they suffered the shame with him. The high cost of loving money. What a shame. I have sinned. I have sinned. The next one is the story of Gehazi. Now, Gehazi is probably lesser known than the story of Achan. Gehazi is in 2 Kings chapter 5. And it's the story of Naaman. And Naaman's one of the more famous stories, but we usually don't read the whole chapter. We read the first part of the chapter. Naaman is the Syrian commander who has leprosy, and he goes to Israel to get healed of the leprosy by the prophet, and Elisha is going to heal him. But when he is going, verse number 5 tells us that the king of Syria sent 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold. That's a lot of gold. And 10 changes of clothing. Now, the 10 changes of clothing is always a little bit humorous to us as we read that, but it was probably ornate garments. There was something special about these very wealthy clothes. In other words, this isn't just rags that were just to be worn. These were something significant because they're connected with the 10 talents and the 6,000 shekels of gold, and then you have 10 changes of clothing. So whatever these clothing were, they were very precious, expensive clothing. Well, Elisha is going to heal Naaman by him going and dipping in the Jordan River 7 times. Naaman's healed. And Naaman says, I want to give you all these things. Let me pay you. Let me offer this, not necessarily as a payment, but as a gratitude. And I want to read what Elisha says. Verse number 16. But as the Lord lives, before whom I stand, I will receive none. And he urged him to take it, but he refused. And Naaman said, if not, please let me be given to your servant 2 mule loads of earth. For from now on, your servant will not offer burnt offering or sacrifice to any god but the Lord. So he said, Elisha said, I'm not taking it. Don't even offer it. It's a gift from the God. You go on home. He says, well, at least please give me 2 mule loads of dirt so he can have some, quote, in their concept, holy ground in that way he was thinking, back from this land of Israel so he can worship God. Now, he heads on his way. Now, let's skip on down to verse number 20. Gehazi, who was the servant of Elisha, thought, why? Why did he not take them? And he was greedy. He said, see, my master has spared this Naaman the Syrian in not accepting from his hand what he brought. As the Lord lives, I will run after him and get something from him. He did this secretly, we find out. So Gehazi followed Naaman. When Naaman saw someone running after him, he got down from the chariot to meet him and said, is all well? He said, all is well, my master. There have just now come to me from a hill country of Ephraim two young men of the sons of the prophet. This is probably a lie, it seems. Please give them a talent of silver and two changes of clothes. Maybe it was true. We don't know for sure, but there's no indication from the text that this is probably, you know, he's doing all this underhandedly is the indication from the text. So this could be a lie. It's a deception. And Naaman said, be pleased to accept two talents. He urged him and tied two talents of silver in two bags with two changes of clothing and laid them on two of his servants, and they carried them before Gehazi. So he took these things back. He didn't get everything that Naaman brought, but he got a significant amount of money. Now when he came up and took these things and put them, verse 24, in his house and sent the men away, they departed. And then he went in and stood before his master Elisha. And Elisha, you know, if you're going to fool somebody, don't try to fool the prophet of God. That's the wrong guy to fool. Because the prophet of God can, by inspiration, know these things. So the prophet of God says, where have you been, Gehazi? That's like a mama, right? Mama's got, you know, eyes all through the back of their head. They walk into the boy, where you been at, boy? They know, where you been at, Gehazi? Your servant went nowhere. Now that's a lie, isn't it? I didn't go anywhere. Two mistakes. Don't try to deceive a prophet of God. And secondly, don't lie to a prophet of God. But he said to him, did not my heart go when the man turned from his chariot to meet you? Was it a time? No, was the purpose here to accept money and garments, olive orchards, vineyards, sheep, oxen, male servants, female servants? Well, obviously it wasn't. This was not about money. We did not deserve this money. This was a gift of the Lord. We should not have accepted this. You were greedy in that you went after it. Therefore, the high cost of loving money, therefore the leprosy of Naaman shall cling to you and to your descendants forever. So he went out from his presence, a leper like snow. If you really look at this overall chapter, the chapter begins with a Syrian Gentile having leprosy. He was cleansed by God. And it ends with the servant of the prophet of God, the one you would expect to be a holy man, to have leprosy because of his greed. The Syrian is cleansed because he was humble and obedient. The servant of the prophet is given leprosy because of his greed. Not only that, but we notice again that it also passes to his family and affects his family. The next one is Judas. Remember, we have four. Try to move on to Judas, Matthew 26. And I have a couple other verses I want to look at with Judas. You're probably a little more familiar with the next two stories. One of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priest, this is Matthew 26, 14 and 15, and said, what will you give me if I deliver him over to you? Judas went after the betrayal of Jesus with the question, what will you give me? What will you give me? And they offered him 30 pieces of silver. Now turn to John. I didn't put this on the PowerPoint, but turn to John chapter 12. John 12, 4 through 8. In this account, you have the description earlier during the anointing of Jesus by Mary. And at this occasion, Judas, verse number 4, was upset about this. And he said, verse 5, why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor? He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money back, he used to help himself to what was put into it. We want to talk a lot about why did Judas do what he did. The main biblical reason given for why Judas did what he did is he was greedy. He was a thief. He liked to help himself to the money pot. He went to the priest and he said, what will you give me for Jesus? Now look to Acts chapter 1. The high cost of this. Now, you know the story. after Jesus is crucified, he sees Jesus being crucified, Judas goes, Matthew's gospel, and throws that money back to the chief priest in the temple. And they say, what is it to us? And they use that money to buy, we find out, a field of blood. So Judas was guilty. Number one, he had tremendous guilt because of seeking money. But then notice, Peter tells us, Matthew tells us that he went out and hung himself. Peter tells us in Acts chapter 1, for he was numbered, verse 17, he was numbered among us and was allotted his share in this ministry. Now this man acquired a field with the reward of his wickedness. They used the money to buy the field of blood, the potter's field, to just bury people in. Falling headlong, he burst open in the middle and all his bowels gushed out. That's a nice thought for you before you go eat supper tonight. Probably the thought from Matthew's gospel that he hung himself is he either hung himself and his body decayed there to the point that his body fell open, his body either rotted there or it fell off the rope was cut, or he fell down and when his body hit, it burst open. Or it was that he got a cheap rope, he got a tree branch that didn't hold him, and he went to hang himself and he fell off and landed on the rocks and it caused his bowels to gush open and he died that way. The point, you say, well, why is all those gruesome details in there, Josh? The point is, look at what Judas got with his greed. Look at his bitter ending, his guilt, his remorse, his suicide, and his death. It's a terrible story. A man who spent, we could generalize and say, a man who spent 3 years with Jesus ended like that. It's almost unfathomable to think about how a man could spend 3 years with Jesus and think that money means more than Jesus. The last one is Ananias and Sapphira. This is just a few pages over Acts chapter 5. And this is a story about Ananias and Sapphira, a married couple who sold a piece of property. And with the wife's knowledge, he kept back for himself some of the proceeds and brought only a part of it and laid it at the apostles' feet. Now, Ananias and Sapphira is a little challenging because there's two parts of their greed. One part was money. The other part seems to be notoriety or fame. They wanted a claim. They were not obligated to sell. They could have just been honest with it. But they were lying to cover up their greed. They wanted this notoriety. So they had a scheme or a plan. They took part of it, but they said they were going to sell it all. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie? See, part of this is dishonesty. Which, isn't it interesting? Isn't it sad how often dishonesty goes with greed? Greed is generally connected with dishonesty and lies. To keep back for yourselves part of the proceeds of the land. While it remained unsold, did it not remain your own? After it was sold, was it not at your disposal? Why is it that you have contrived this deed in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to God. When Ananias heard these words, he fell down and breathed his last. And great fear came upon all who heard it. I bet so. The young men rose and wrapped him up and carried him out and buried him. You know, I thought about this the other day when we were reading this for our one word. His wife didn't even get to go to his funeral. They carried him out and buried him. Didn't even tell her. She comes in. After 3 hours, the next verse says, not knowing what had happened, Peter said to her, tell me whether you sold the land for so much. She said, yes, for so much. Peter said to her, how is it that you have agreed together to test the Spirit of the Lord? Behold, the feet of those who have buried your husband are at the door, and they will carry you out. That's when she found out about her husband dying. Immediately, she fell down at his feet, breathed her last, and the young men came and found her dead, and they carried her out and buried her beside her husband. Great fear came upon the whole church and upon all who heard these things. Preacher didn't have to preach on greed that Sunday. All he had to do is say, "Brethren, we had a story that happened this past week." The church knew that greed was wrong. Church knew that lying was wrong. Great fear came upon the whole church. The high cost of loving money. Hebrews chapter 13, verse number 5 says this, and I think it's a challenge for all of us. Keep your life free from the love of money. So this is the opposite of 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 10, which tells us the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Here it tells us how we deal with the love of money. We have to keep our life free from it. Be content. I think that's the secret. Be content. Remember what I was telling you? When you're driving by that car lot, I'm just using car lot as an example. Don't mean to pick on car lot dealers. But and every day, when you see that car, instead of getting to covet that one you don't have and thinking about how bad you want it and what you got to do to get it, and coveting it to the point that you'll sin to get it, you need to stop and look at the car you're driving and be thankful you're blessed to drive that car. Love of money is combated with contentment with what we have. For he has said, "I will never leave you nor forsake you." And thus we must ask the question, what are we seeking? Matthew 6, 19-21. "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and thieves break in and steal. But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys or where the thieves do not break in and steal." Listen to this verse. "For where your treasure is," what you seek, what you focus on, "that's where your heart will be also." Your heart is chained to your treasure. And so whatever you focus your treasure on, your heart, your emotions, your love, is going to grow for that very item. So be careful what you treasure. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, I hope we've all been motivated to put away the love of money and realize that we have to be free from that each day and fight that temptation. Because if we don't fight it, it can bring misery and high cost to us and to our families and to our church. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, come as together we stand and as we sing.
I bring my sins to Thee.